you just found out you're pregnant. Congratulations. And now you're wondering, well, what next or what now? Or maybe you're hoping to be pregnant soon and the questions still remain. In this episode, Dr. Leah and I break down a few things to consider when you first find out you're pregnant, ranging from how to calculate an accurate due date considering your ovulation, to then some things to start doing or stop doing, then our favorite supplement recommendations and some advice around having grace with your dietary choices, then how to choose the right birth provider for you, and more. So here we go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
The metabolic needs of pregnancy, postpartum healing, and making breast milk require more minerals than in other times of your life. And staying truly, deeply hydrated during these times is very important. Nowadays, there are more options for this than ever, and ingredient quality and manufacturing integrity is very important for Dr. Leah and I. That's why we love Redmond Relight electrolyte powders. Mined in the USA, Relight contains Redmond's ancient, unrefined sea salt with 60-plus trace minerals in addition to the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and magnesium that pregnant and breastfeeding moms need. Pregnancy demands a huge increase in blood volume and synthesis of an entire new baby, and that requires, you guessed it, minerals. This is the perfect blend to be sipping on during your labor or to have mixed into your bedside water bottle during breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, strawberry lemonade, or lemon lime. Grab a sample pack option to try them yourself and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating!
Okay, we are back at it again, and I'm here to interview my bestie, who you guys all know, Dr. Morgan, and we're going to talk about everything that you need to know when you first become pregnant, which is a really exciting and intense time. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast and choosing it, you might be intentionally trying to get pregnant. Some women unintentionally get pregnant. So there's both scenarios that are going on, which I'm sure you can talk about. But basically, it's a season, I feel, that no one knows what to do with because it's a very unsupported season, both medically and socially. It's just kind of like you're doing it by yourself. And so hopefully we can shed some light in this episode on all of the things that need to happen or that you think about or that's important once you take that pregnancy test and it's positive. So take it away, Dr. Morgan.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I remember so clearly the first time finding out that I was pregnant, standing like exactly where I was, and Wes immediately started taking a video, and then I was like so embarrassed, and I was like, shh. I was like, shh. Like, to who? Like, to myself. But I just remembered being like, it's kind of like when you get your period for the first time, when you're, you know, however old you were. I was like almost 15. I couldn't
remember. You remember it. I was so young. I'm like, I don't remember that.
How old were you?
12. 11 okay. Or 12. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. 11.
I know. Yeah. So early. Too early.
Oh, man. I mean, it's really not like there's 9-year-olds that get their periods, but it's just like that to me. At 11, I was like breeding hamsters and like chasing my friends and barking at them and stuff. So like there was no chance. By 15, when I was getting it finally, I was just like begging. I was the last one, like, oh my God, give me boobs, give me periods, like anything, please. I don't want to be a boy anymore. You know, in my stature, I'm still kind of like a boy, but it's okay. Anyway, I remember getting my period and you just like, it's like this thing that you've been waiting for. And then when you get pregnant, maybe if you weren't intentionally getting pregnant, it's a little bit less like this, but still I think what remains is this idea that like your entire world has changed, but you don't actually feel all that different. Like you expect that you're going to feel something like in your body, you're going to feel pregnant. And maybe sometimes people do because that's why they take the test. They feel nauseous, or whatever. But even then it's like, you still don't really have like an awareness of your uterus. You're not like feeling a bump. You don't feel like a mom. It's just this sort of thing that you just know, like, you know, there's this little tiny life that's sprouting inside of you. And it's going to be actually like months and months and months until you really can like see it, feel the moving inside you, whatever. It's sort of this mm-hmm. odd time, but you know, in the weeks to come, usually once you do, after you find out when you've missed your period, you know, you'll have lots of symptoms, whether that's fatigue or nausea or food aversion, all the different things. Sometimes people blow through all of that and have no symptoms, and that's great. I don't feel like it's that common, but it's great. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I just wanted to talk about a couple of the things, because sometimes even the podcast episodes that we've had in the past are not that helpful to like those people in those first early weeks when they're like, well, what do I do? I just found out I'm pregnant. Now what? And so in case you hadn't been totally ready for this and had done tons of research and, you know, you were absolutely ready to hit the ground running, hopefully this episode can kind of get you there. So I broke it into a couple of different sections. Number one, the first thing that I think is really important to figure out is, to the best of your abilities and understanding the reason why it's so important, to get a very good, accurate due date. Mm. So due dates are calculated based on like an average calculation that was made up a long, long time ago. People in the birth world like to call them guess dates because it's just like the guess of the date that they think that your baby will be about 40 weeks. No one is under the assumption that we think your baby is actually going to come on that day. I mean, maybe some people think that, but that is not that's not what's like assumed there. It's more just saying this is about 40 weeks. And then most people are going to give birth between 38 and 42 weeks or something like that. But we really need to get clear about this actual date. And where it's based off of in the conventional world is your last menstrual period. So the first day of your LMP. So let's just make an easy example and say that your LMP was January 1st.
Which is the first day that you bleed.
Yes, it's day one of your bleeding, day one of your period. That is the day. So like if you've been cycle tracking, this should be pretty easy to find that day. Still doesn't mean that that's going to be your most accurate number, and I'll get to that in a second. But the way that if you were to just walk into an OBGYN's office, they would ask you, when's your LMP? You give them the date, January 1st, and then they're going to say, okay, based on this algorithm calculation, you're due on, let's see, what would that be like? September, sometime maybe in September.
Probably mid-September.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking back.
Ish, right?
Well, I know that because I transferred Avia on January 13th and I would have been considered 2 weeks, you know, well, yes. 3 weeks at that point, and I was due September 30th. So,
yeah, I got pregnant with Sloan at the very end of January and she was a mid-October baby. So in the beginning of January, it'd be like somewhere in September. Either way, whatever. Let's just say that they give you a September 15th due date. Let's just make it easy. Okay. So cool. That would be what you would run with. And if you are somebody who has a very consistent cycle of, say, the perfect optimal situation, which would be like a 28-day cycle. Mm-hmm. Generally, people who have a 28-day cycle will ovulate, so they drop their egg, around day 14. And this, if this is true for you in your picture, then that due date calculation is probably pretty dang accurate. But in the case of people who maybe have longer cycles, say they have 32, 38-day cycles, or they have skipped cycles. You have PCOS. You don't actually even ovulate every month. You don't have a cycle that is consistent. Maybe your cycles change. Like, you know, sometimes they're 28 days, sometimes they're 40 days, sometimes they're 36 days, sometimes they're 29 days. They're, you know, and they're all over the place. You don't really have a full understanding of exactly when you ovulated because maybe you were not trying to get pregnant, or you weren't cycle tracking, you weren't basal body temperature tracking, using LH strips, doing any of that kind of stuff where you had the data to say, this is the day I ovulated. If you don't have any of that stuff and you're just going off of your LMP, you could be wildly off on your due date by multiple weeks because your ovulation is variable. Ovulation can be variable based on sickness, lack of sleep, like a fever will push ovulation sometimes, or a high stress time, a red eye flight, like being awake randomly in the night. If you were breastfeeding or something like that, obviously, then that could be pushing your ovulation back. Like there's a lot of things that can happen. Taking certain medications, taking antibiotics for some people, it's not the same mechanism of why it makes birth control not work. That's like a medication interaction. But my point is that we need to understand that the actual most accurate way to calculate a due date would be based on our ovulation date. Mm-hmm. Traditional OBGYN offices are not going to do that for you. So if you are in that category where you have any kind of a possibility or a consistent pattern, especially of ovulation that is variable and it is maybe inconsistent, it would be your best advantage to try and either backtrack as much as you can, gather as many data points as you can from what you remember of when your possible ovulation could have been. And if that's not possible, then get an early ultrasound. An early ultrasound, I know people are very anti-ultrasounds. Here's a couple of reasons why they could be a good idea. First of all, it doesn't need to be very fast. It does not need to be like a 35-minute ultrasound. You can say, hey, put the little wand, well, actually, probably at that point, you're doing an intravaginal ultrasound, which is not that comfortable, but it's really not the most terrible thing in the whole world either. And they're going to look and measure, you know, the size of the sac, make sure that there is a baby in there, see a heartbeat, etc. And the measurements of fetus development at that stage in the early first trimester is so textbook that it can be a really good way to get a good accurate dating, because you could be 5 weeks pregnant, or you could be 9 weeks pregnant, or you could be 11 weeks pregnant. And there's a huge difference there, and big deal. And yes, at some point, probably this would get caught on ultrasound. But even if, let's just say that it's a little bit less obvious, and you're 1 week difference, you're within a 1 week variance, that might not seem like a big deal to you. I understand. And I wouldn't have thought that it was a big deal to me or to anybody else either. But where it is a big deal is that, especially with first time moms, your most likely time for spontaneous labor to begin is in the 41st week of labor. So meaning you are 41 plus going into that 42nd week, and almost all states have rules and regulations that you are not, quote unquote, allowed to gestate beyond 42 weeks because of stillbirth increasing rates, which is, it's a very, very small fraction. It's a like almost doubling of the rate, but it's literally like 0.5 to 1%, you know, that's like a double. So it sounds really big and scary, but it's actually not that big of a change of a risk. And what a lot of practitioners will do is induce at about 41 weeks or 41 and 3 or 41 and 5 or something like that. But you may actually only be 40 weeks if that 1 week variance stands. And so the reason why this matters is because going into spontaneous labor has a huge slew of benefits, because then you get to avoid induction. And there is a lot of things, of reasons why we may want to avoid induction unless it's medically necessary. Inducing because of due dates is not considered a medical medically necessary induction. It is a law, regulation, time, fear-based, weird thing that we do that we've kind of added on to people that causes a lot of stress to women at the end of their pregnancies, because they're like, holy shit, I got checked, my cervix checked at 39 weeks by my OBGYN and I'm not dilated at all. Wah! And it's like, holy shit, you're not going to be dilated at 39 weeks.
Right.
Like, I mean, some people will, but the vast majority of people will not be. And that doesn't mean anything. And just give your body time. Like, holy moly, let's just relax about it. And it's like, there's this beautiful unfolding to spontaneous labor happening naturally, if it can, you know. And so ideally, we want to wait as long, we want a due date that is the most accurate, obviously. But if we're going to err on one side or another, it would probably be, it would behoove us, my favorite word.
Behoove.
I would love to know the etiology of that word. Or, entomology is insects, isn't it? What's it called?
Etiology is like, well, that's like with disease, like what causes disease.
Oh, shoot. What is it?
It's got to be a different word than etiology.
Entomology. Is it
entomology? They're too medical in our mind.
There's entomology, but then what's the insect one? I don't know. Either way.
That I have no idea.
Either way, it would behoove us to have a due date that's actually a little bit on the more conservative side, like long, lengthways, because of the average stats of when women go into labor. And there's a lot of birth workers who think that we need to adjust these calculations because they actually don't even reflect what is the most average common time that a woman would spontaneously go into labor. And they think that probably it's off by a week. And so then that would be putting our, what we are saying as 40 weeks at a new 41 week point. You know what I'm saying?
Imagine?
And I know for you, you gestate really long.
Yeah, no, I gestate forever. Like, I don't know if the baby's ever going to come out of my body. Who knows? But I tend to have longer cycles. I know that I ovulate at least a week later than most women. like, well, half a week to a week. Like my typical ovulation was around day 18 or 19. I have more of that PCOS-y type pattern, which I've mentioned before, because I would not be diagnosed with PCOS, probably because my diet and lifestyle is so helpful that I just have to keep it in check. But if I, you know, just ate the standard American diet and stuff, I probably would have PCOS. And so I don't know if that late, the ovulation late cycle leads to late gestation. I would love to see if there were studies on that, and I've never looked them up, but it'd be interesting. And then I also was an IVF mama, and so many IVF women are induced. So we don't even have the data. And that's just because they're just like, because in, you know, we don't really have a lot of the data to say, do IVF moms gestate longer?
Right.
Or not, because a lot of times, like you said, and if you get past that 40 weeks, they're like, oh, we're going to induce, you know, and especially, I don't know, there's just like a lot of reasons that they say for that. But at the end of the day, could you imagine what the rates of C-section and medical intervention and all of the outcomes that we see, how different that would be if we just logistically had a 1 week add-on to the gestation timeline?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's just crazy because it's just like a weird law that we make up, and, you know, people panic about it or whatever. But could you imagine if just even with this whole, yeah, a lot of people get induced past 41 or even 40, if it was just one more week, how different it would be, even if you did have to induce. I don't know. It's just,
or like, I mean, if there was at least the option, if people could say, all right, here's the actual stillbirth statistics, or, you know, they do biophysical profiles where they look at the health of the placenta and blood flow and things like that. And it's like, often though, in those, they make a weight estimate of the baby, and then that is enough to usually scare the practitioner into not wanting to go longer, because the weight estimates will say like, oh, this baby's 11 pounds. But we know that those ultrasounds are 2 pounds plus or minus. They could be off. So if they're saying that your baby could be 11 pounds, your baby could actually be 13 pounds or 8 pounds. Or I mean, nine, sorry. I can do that. But anyways, I just wish that it was more in the hands of the woman to choose and decide and say, you know what, I'm healthy, everything's chilling. Women in my family line have usually gone a little bit later, and that increased stillbirth risk that happens at actually 43 weeks isn't concerning to me. Let's just keep going and see. Or, you know, I'm having signs of labor. I think it's probably going to be in the next couple of days, so we're just going to like wait. I don't know. I think it would be so cool. And, you know, the states have made laws where home birth midwives and birth center midwives cannot see you anymore after that 42nd week. So 41 weeks and 6 days, the baby's not out, like you're transferring. And that is a mental mind F. And I think that we are not giving it enough respect for how, not respect, but enough value, I guess, in the way that it affects the entire process. Because the stress of feeling like a time bomb and feeling like, okay, I have this thing hanging over my head, this induction or this transfer date or whatever. Okay. I'm just going to like, I'm going to be really calm and chill, and I'm going to let my baby come out. It's like, that's obviously the goal. That's you have to try to do that, but how it's just,
I know.
It's just, well, hard.
And for me, you know, I've gone late on both my kids, and where I want to make a point of this for people to really drive home is the 2 points. First, a lot of women reached out to me. So many women reached out to me on Instagram when I was getting close to my due date. And so many were like, oh, my baby came at 41 and 5, 41 and 6, 41 and 6, 41 and 6. Literally one more day and they wouldn't have been able to. Okay. So when you're early pregnant, the reason why this is important and why we're talking about it is one day added on to your gestation could be the difference between you going into labor naturally and having a vaginal birth, if that's what you want. Let's say you're even doing it at home and it only costs $5,500 versus one more day and you're in the hospital, you've been cut open, you have a C-section that takes months, if not years, to recover from, and you have a $52,000 birth.
Oh my gosh. So
I'm just saying, like, when you're early pregnant, you don't even think about it. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter what your due date is. And some people might even be like, oh, you know, even
it's earlier,
you know, because I remember when we were talking to my midwife with Avia and we were between these two dates, and then she picked the earlier one. And I was just like, da, 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 like, blah, that sounds cool. It's like, so blah. And now looking back, I'm like, that was so dumb. Like, if we had just picked the later date, one day later, yeah, I could have potentially had my baby.
Yeah, naturally. Because you were literally in labor. I was in labor. 41 plus six, but you had not had her yet. And it was like clear, you were in like an active, early to active labor pattern, but it was clear you weren't going to be giving birth like in the next few hours. And so you had to transfer.
Yeah, because I couldn't do it at home. And then that just messes with your whole like hormonal system. I was literally like in panic mode at the hospital. Like, that's not going to help me give birth, you know? So I just think it's important for people to know early on that you will – not that you'll regret it and it's not that you like fudge your dates. But, you know, because it's this guesstimate and it's based off your period, off of an ovulation that is potential, you know, up and down in the world of accuracy – that's what you're saying is these due dates matter, and like one day or 2 days difference, as long as baby's good and healthy, isn't going to make as big of a difference, but it can change your entire birth outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned that. Yeah. Sometimes, especially in the, you're with your first baby, it can feel really exciting when they move your due date up because mm-hmm. you, in your mind, you think,
I'm going to have my baby sooner.
Yes. And that's not, sorry, honey, that does not mean you're going to have your baby sooner.
Nope.
I get it. I understand. But patience, grasshopper, we need to be aware that that isn't what we want. So,
yeah.
And, you know, I also want to say that for the women who do have the data, whether you had LH strips, you had basal body temperature tracking, you have a device like the Oura Ring or something that is telling you when you ovulated, plus like, you know, all your signs and whatever. And then you go to tell your OBGYN or your midwife or whoever, and you say, hey, I know that my LMP was this day, but I actually ovulated this month on like day 21. And so I want to go based on the ovulation calculator due date, which there's websites that have that, where you're calculating out the due date based on the ovulation. And it's going to be mm-hmm. a 2 week difference there. Well, it could be, sorry, no, it's not going to be a 2 week difference. It's going to shave off 2 weeks in the, that's getting a little bit too complicated. We don't need to,
yeah.
This always wigs people out. So don't write. Forget I said anything about 2 weeks.
I know. It's because for people who don't know, the gestation time is not actually based on how long you're actually pregnant.
Yes.
We add 2 weeks for that since your last menstrual period, but you're not pregnant in those 2 weeks.
Right, because you haven't.
That's what we're saying. Well, and this was the argument that we made with me and you going through IVF, because I was like, I feel like this is unfair just to give people like another, you know, practical example, because I know you have a short follicular phase, right? So from period to ovulation, yours is much shorter.
10 days, yeah.
Yeah, 10 days, and mine's 18, okay? That's an entire week difference.
Yeah.
So if you and I got pregnant at the same exact time, and we both went to our providers.
Because we both had our period on the same day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. If we had our period the same day and we got pregnant the same month, you would actually have one more week of gestation time than me. Your baby would actually have been implanted and growing in your body for one whole week longer than mine.
Yeah.
Because we had a period at the exact same time and you got pregnant actually like after ovulation, implantation, baby growing. It like 10, 11 days started that whole fertilization process and mine started on day 18, 19. Yep. So you would have an entire week of gestation more than me. So that is, again, where it's not fair, right? It's not necessarily fair that we go off of just the last menstrual date and not ovulation, but probably to your point, you're saying they're not going to let you go off of ovulation date.
Yeah. And my point to that is that if they argue with you, then pick a different provider because they're not critically thinking. It doesn't – if they're like, oh, no, sorry, we don't do it like that. We have to do a body based on your LMP. And you try really hard and in earnest to explain to them the menstrual cycle, which they should understand, but like the back of their hand. And if they don't understand what you're saying, if they're like really, really, right? I mean, like, do you think I'm being too harsh about that? I think if a provider is not able to look at you critically and say, yeah, you've got all this data that points that if you just are making it up out of thin air, I can understand on a provider's standpoint with liability that they may not want to just like believe you, although that's still kind of like, I don't know. I don't like the way that feels, but I can understand it. But if you come in with data of when you ovulated mm-hmm. and they can't just make that adjustment because their brains are going to explode because it's like not with the algorithm.
Yeah, it's not the algorithm.
Pick someone else.
I have I have a lot of intimacy with the algorithm lately. The algorithms of the medical system. Well, this is what the algorithm says. I'm like, yeah, but what about what is in front of you? Think critically. What is going on? Don't follow a piece of paper. Look at me. I'm the patient.
I know.
Well, anyways.
You guys, it's crazy. It's kind of frustrating. Crazy. And yeah, okay, whatever. We're not going to go there. But so I hope that makes sense. If anybody has questions, let us know. We can kind of do like a whole episode about due dates if we want to, because it is something that, and I'll put an article, I'm going to put this, write this down right now, the evidence-based birth article on due dates, which is just interesting information. It's not going to really talk about like what I'm saying as much here, but you just need to try and have the most accurate time of your ovulation that you possibly can. And if you don't, go and get that early ultrasound, make it quick. And don't trip out about it. It could be very helpful. I think that the benefit of knowing an accurate due date, especially if there's a week or multiple weeks swing that it could be in any direction, far outweighs any theoretical damage that an ultrasound does, which I know a lot of people in this community are very like wary of ultrasounds. And I do get it, but I personally still am very comfortable with a first trimester ultrasound and the anatomy scan. I think that they can be done quickly, but I also think that the information gleaned there could be, you know, life-changing, life-saving, depending on what we're finding.
Because if you're trying to not to have interventions and you do an early ultrasound and get an accurate date and you can avoid a C-section, you avoid IV antibiotics, you avoid fentanyl, you avoid epidural, you avoid, I mean, about the slew of cocktail of interventions that happen if you are unable to have a natural spontaneous labor. Not that it's, you know, the worst thing either. Like,
I've
had all of those and my kiddos are totally healthy and fine and we'll like, you know, heal whatever we need to. But if you're someone who's so afraid of intervention, getting an accurate date might be less harmful, like you said.
Yeah. It might in the end actually give you less interventions, not having to be induced or at least just have that stress on over your head. So, and then also like all of your growth measurements and everything will be more accurate when they're not going to tell you your baby's too small or too big or rah, 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 because they're actually like expecting the baby to be a totally different size than it is. And then they freak you out and they make you get more ultrasounds because they're like, you have IUGR or which is intrauterine growth restriction. So that's like if baby's too small, or they're telling you that you're going to have a big baby and we should just induce at 39 weeks or whatever. Okay. So like there's lots of things. Okay. So that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. Second thing here is some immediate pregnancy do's and don'ts. And this is not a complete list. This is just a few things that I wanted to take note of. So when you first find out you're pregnant, and this is usually probably for in the case of an unplanned pregnancy, but planned too, if you just didn't quite like think of this, and that's totally normal if you didn't, because there's a lot of things in life to think about at all times. One thing you need to make sure of is that if you are on any routine, regular medications, that they are safe in pregnancy.
Right.
So you get a positive test, say you're taking some kind of medication, whatever it is, some kind of ADD, ADHD drug, some sort of antidepressant, a thyroid medication type, a something, whatever it is, blood pressure medication,
hormones. Just because hormones, even if you're on bioidentical hormones, like my provider put me on testosterone, even though I'm 25, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You do not want to be on testosterone pregnant.
Yes, exactly.
Even if it's natural.
Yep. No, we're not doing that.
Progesterone is the only thing hormonally that you can be on, be pregnant. Throwing it out there.
Yes, exactly. Well, and thyroid. Yes.
And thyroid. Yes.
But thinking about the like, you know, sex hormones.
Sex hormones.
Yeah. So you call some office and you get an appointment or your PCP or whatever, because you need to have that counsel to make sure that that's going to be okay for you. Or if the dose can stay on it, but maybe the dose needs to change, et cetera. There's nuances there. Okay. Also with supplements and diet. So if you have not been on a prenatal, you know, we are big advocates in the preconception world. So we really love people to be on a prenatal months before pregnancy, because it's very strong in the research that this is kind of the best bet to get going with making sure that you have got a lot of the good nutrient stores and that your egg quality is as rocking as it can be, because it takes 3 months for the egg that you become pregnant with. It was actually starting to be sort of like made and developed 3 months prior to you getting pregnant with it. You know what I mean? So it being the one that the sperm went in. And so what have we been doing for the last 3 months? You know, we want to be as healthy as we can in that time period. Now, if this is an unexpected pregnancy, okay, cool, whatever. Let's just hit the ground running and let's start to get on some good supplementations.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Did you know that 97% of women in the US take a prenatal supplement, yet 95% plus are still deficient in key nutrients? My favorite prenatal is from a company called Needed because they dose nutrients at levels to not just meet the bare minimum as most prenatals do. They actually use form of nutrients and dosages that allow mama and baby to thrive. Needed actually approached me years ago and asked me if I could help them design the perfect prenatal because they knew that the current prenatals available were not actually helping women. We spent over 3 years diving into the research and understanding what practitioners are seeing and what women actually need at this important season before we formulated this amazingly supportive option. It's no wonder over 4,000 practitioners now recommend Needed, something I am very proud of. If you have followed me for a while, you know that prenatals and optimizing nutrients starts long before pregnancy, so no matter where you are along your fertility or motherhood journey, Needed is the brand I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%.
Okay, back to the show.
Just in a nutshell, usually we recommend a good high-quality prenatal. You and I are very partial to Needed. You are, I don't think people know this, you don't talk about it enough. If I were you, I'd be like screaming it from the rooftops. You are the formulator of the Needed prenatal multivitamin. So
I know. I told them on a call the other day, I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not more famous. No, oh because God. There's like famous people who are making prenatals now and they're just selling because they have famous people behind
them. Oh, we're going to make it.
That's awesome. And I'm like super happy for them. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not more famous.
I don't think you really like want to be famous. I feel like that doesn't like jive with your, neither of us really want to be famous.
Not when you're having young kids.
Yeah.
It's like, this is just, it's a lot, you know, but yeah, no, it is cool. It is special. I should say it more.
You do need to say it more. You need to shout out for the stuff because it's a really big deal. And the Needed prenatal is just the best. It just is the best. So it's best for multiple different reasons. One of the reasons is that it has the best forms of the nutrients. Second reason is that it has the best, most robust like amount, the dosage of each nutrient. So if you compare it with the other popular types, I won't name names, but there's two on Instagram constantly that people constantly ask me about that have really, really good marketing, understandable. But look at the labels. Mm-hmm. Compare the dosages of what you're getting. If you don't want to get as much, then that's fine. Then take something different. But if you want to get the optimal nutrition, especially knowing that usually in the first trimester, people are going to feel ill. They're usually going to have some kind of a food aversion, not be able to eat all the healthy foods that they once did. It's really nice to be able to at least lean back into saying, okay, well, at least I took this prenatal today. I mean, and sometimes at some certain points, you may not even be able to swallow prenatal. And then you could try the powder, or then you go to other things, liquid prenatals, gummy prenatals. You do whatever you're going to do. But when you get pregnant, it is in your best interest to be on something very good and high quality. So a good high quality prenatal is a given. Now, omega-3s are also very important in pregnancy. If you do not eat fish like 3 or 4 times a week, then I would say that you should probably be on one.
Yeah.
Another one is making sure that your vitamin D levels have been checked. And if not, then you're taking some. A good quality prenatal will have some vitamin D, but it's not going to be at a level that will help increase and boost your levels to any extent. It'll kind of just be at the maintenance dose. Mm-hmm. So we want your vitamin D to be like 50, 60, 70, 80, somewhere in there. Most women hang around 30, which is the, you know, lower end of the threshold that they'll tell you is normal in the reference range. But I would say that in most practitioners in the like functional medicine sphere would say that that's not adequate. So we do want to increase it. So you may be needing to take an additional vitamin D3. Also, if you don't eat eggs very often, taking some additional choline. Now, one of the cool things about the Needed prenatal is that it has choline in it. It doesn't have the entirety of the choline that you need in the day. So you could take a separate choline, which Needed does make, or other companies make. Also, another reason why I forgot to say that the Needed prenatal is superior to others is because it does not contain iron, which is important. Yes, do pregnant women need iron? For sure. And most women at some point will become anemic and need to add some more. But when you take your iron in conjunction with all of the other vitamins and namely calcium inside of most of prenatals, you are not absorbing it very well. Mm-hmm. So it just is kind of a waste. It's sort of like, and some women don't need iron. And so it's nice because it can be a little bit more tailored to the individual. So that's another thing. So look at all of these different like nuances when you're looking at your prenatal vitamins. You could also add in a probiotic during your pregnancy. You could also add in some more magnesium, because people often will have restless leg syndrome, or they'll have some insomnia issues or constipation issues, and magnesium can really help with all of that. I love the triple mag magnesium personally. That's just like my you know, favorite thing. Whatever. Would you add anything else for prenatal supplements that are kind of like broad spectrum?
Yeah, I would say you probably covered it all. And one thing to note, because it's just going around right now, is if you do get sick in early pregnancy, choline is actually one of the most protective nutrients for your baby's brain. So getting a fever in pregnancy is never ideal. We want to avoid that as much as possible. Obviously, you know, if you had a magic wand and could avoid being pregnant or sick, you know, we wouldn't choose to be sick. So if you do get sick, getting in that extra choline is going to be really, really important. So like we said, Needed has an add-on. Other companies do too. But that is another beneficial thing to protect baby in those early weeks.
Great add-on. And I'm going to link in the show notes the episode that we did with Dr. Eric Calhoun, who talks all about this fetal brain development and kind of like brain boosting your baby and what you can do and different nuances there. She's so smart. And yeah, that I feel like choline is kind of trending. It's like something that people didn't really put any clout or attention onto it. And then now it's like, oh wait, this is amazing. Yeah. And if you take something like the Needed prenatal and then you eat some eggs, you'll get your daily dosage. But again, if you don't, then you should maybe take an additional one. And then yeah, when you get sick, it's such a good one to add. You could also add a little bit more omega-3s if you get sick, something like that inflammation modulation. Yeah. Okay. So, and then with diet, if we can, we want to try to treat ourselves while we're pregnant as a like overflowing goddess, just completely packed full of the brim to the brim of nutrients. Like your cup runneth over of nutrients. Like you just, but that is also really hard to do sometimes. So you're going to give yourself grace. Yes. Yep. So we are going to keep all of this in mind, and we're going to give ourselves grace with making some of these decisions and choices, and also with what we like literally can tolerate. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a pretty health oriented person, and that's great. Cool. Love it. Welcome to the club. We are happy you're here. And it can be really hard for health oriented people in the first trimester, because we can get really like guilty and beat ourselves up. Yeah. Over, you know, like not having eaten a green vegetable in like 7 weeks. And it's just, you just are going to do the best you can. Like, what else are you going to do? You're going to beat yourself up every single day because you couldn't eat it. Like, no, that is a stress and anxiety that you don't need. Your baby doesn't need. You're going to say, shame. I'm going to do the best that I can. And maybe I can get a smoothie in. Maybe not. Maybe I'm just going to eat cheese and crackers. Maybe I'm going to eat plain pasta. Maybe I'm going to hardly eat anything at all. Maybe I'm going to eat out every single meal because nothing sounds good in my fridge, or whatever you're going to do. Sometimes it's survival mode. And yep. For those that don't experience that level of food aversion and nausea and stuff, cool. Good for you. Do whatever else, you know, eat the things that you can, which would namely be, if we could give some quick guidelines, would be like about 100 grams of protein per day. Sounds crazy. And yes, it takes some effort, but it's not that bad once you get into a routine with it, especially if you can eat things like dairy and eggs, then there's a million ways to make those go around to add up. Also including, you know, meat or fish or poultry with your lunch and your dinner, add on, you know, powders and whatever, things like that, that are going to help you get to that number. And then making sure that like the food that you're eating is of high quality. So if you can eat organic, choosing is organic where you can. And if you have to be picky and choosy with your organics, then looking at something like the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, which if you don't know what I'm talking about. So every year the EPA, is it, puts out a,
EWG
or EWG EPA. What is the EPA? Isn't that for
Environmental Protection Agency?
I was thinking of PETA.
Yeah, Environmental Working Group. Well, no, actually it might be a segment of the EPA.
Maybe it's the EPA under, or the EWG under the EPA. Who knows?
Maybe.
These acronyms.
Who Either knows?
Way, it's a list of the 15 cleanest fruits and vegetables. That means that like they have the lowest pesticide, herbicide profile when grown conventionally. Then there's the 12 dirtiest, so the Dirty Dozen and then the Clean 15. So there's the 12 dirtiest, meaning that in a conventional setting, these are sprayed the most, or maybe because of the skin of the fruit or the vegetable, they sort of like hoard and accumulate the toxins more. So it is in your best interest to buy those ones organic. Mm-hmm. And the others you can maybe just buy conventional. Yeah. So do what you can, especially in this economy, right? Because it's really hard. And then high quality meats that are pasture raised. So like a cow should eat grass, right? We all can agree with that. There's a lot of benefits that happen to the cow's physiology that when it eats grass, and when we eat the animals, when they are eating the things that they should eat, there is going to be more of the fat soluble vitamins and the omegas in the right profile, you know, in the right numbers and proportions and ratios and all of these different things, because that's the way that it was designed. It was that we should be, you know, doing that the best we can. We should be eating fish that are wild caught and not in, you know, farmed. Our chicken ideally are out on like a pasture where they are eating bugs and seeds and things. Maybe they're also eating some kind of a grain or a pellet. Okay, fine. But if we can, we want to choose those types of things. Mm-hmm. Vegetables and fruits and stuff like that, rah, 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 whatever. You're going to do the best you can. But if we can be intentional and handle it, then we are going to try to aim for a couple of these different markers. Mm-hmm. But again, having grace on ourselves, you will get by. Usually people are not sick your entire pregnancy. So at some point you'll be able to add in more of those foods. Maybe just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dr. Leah.
No, that's okay. No, and it is important. I love the grace piece, because what's important is we don't want to not tell people what's ideal. You know, we come into this with the fertility space too. We need to know what's ideal.
Yes.
And it has to be something that we're striving for often. You know, if no one knows that, you know, grass-fed beef is superior to corn-fed beef, you know, you're not going to know that. It's important to know that. And when you become pregnant, you might only be able to eat, you know, fast food for a minute. And I've been there. I've been in the, you know, the line at Chick-fil-A, and I know that they use MSG, and it's like, I just had to, otherwise I was going to starve to death, you know, or I need to go to PF Chang's. I have to eat sticky high fructose corn syrup. I don't even know, but it's so good when you're pregnant. I don't know, you know, and it's fine because you do the best you can in those moments. And then when you're like, I literally can't choose anything else, don't beat yourself up about it, because that stress is so much worse. So it's this delicate balance that I find in teaching in the fertility space, and it's the same in the early pregnancy space, is we always hold in our mind's eye what is the best, and we're always aiming and striving for that, and absolutely not freaking out and beating ourselves up when the only choice that we have is something that's less than ideal, knowing that our body is resilient, we have safe things in place to handle it. You know, we take these steps so that we can make these choices at other times. So, you know, don't freak out because there's seed oils somewhere. It's like, okay, but you're going to be okay, and you're going to do better as soon as you can. And just don't beat yourself up about it, because I've been there. And it's a gnarly place to be when you're a health conscious person. And I totally understand that. And it's just, yeah, it's important.
It is what it is. Yeah. Sometimes ignorance is bliss. And this is, I feel like, one of those situations where there has to be some, it would be really, really cool research to see if there was some kind of metric where the attitude and energy of the person eating the food, if we could like measure how that affects them.
The energetics of it.
Yeah, the energetics of it.
I mean, I think that there, on some levels, I think that research sort of has been done in like some of the blue zones and other areas where community and the energetics of how people are when they eat is very different than even what they're eating.
Yeah.
And I think it would be amazing to study. And also, I think there is some evolutionary benefit to some degree. You know, we get really nauseous. Well, not we, all of us, me, but some women can with leftovers, right? Mm. It's like leftovers are just like, oh, which is very much a histamine thing. So if you're experiencing a lot of nausea to things like fish and leftovers and that, it could be that you have a histamine problem.
Yes.
And there are things like DAO, diamine oxidase, DAO. It's not DOA, that help to break down histamines. But there's some good evolution in that, because we don't want to eat spoiled food. You know, you're protecting your child.
Yeah. A lot of people will be anti-meat, and it's like, there is more risk that those things could be contaminated with bacteria that may, you know, cause a problem in the pregnancy or something like that. So yeah, I think you're right. There is some of it where it's like, maybe this has a purpose.
Yeah. And so know that, and like, again, know that it's a season and it will probably shift and change. And there might just be a time when you don't eat a lot of meat and you'll get protein other ways, and then you'll bring it back into your diet. Same with fruit, same with veggies, same with all these things. So don't make yourself feel bad if for your whole life you ate eggs every morning and all of a sudden you get pregnant and the thought of them is going to make you vomit. It's like that. Don't force yourself. Don't eat the eggs and then force yourself to do that because you think that's what's healthy and you must get the choline. And, you know, it's like a neuroticness of it's like you're going to be better off eating a bagel and keeping that down.
Well, and you know, I just thought of something too, which is that Japanese scientists that did the rice and the water experiments where they like said nice things over the rice or the water and vice versa. So it's like if you are sitting in the line of Chick-fil-A eating your sandwich and you're sitting there going, oh my God, this is so good. This is like the first time that I feel like I've been able to enjoy food and you're loving it and it feels so good and it's so satisfying and you're like happy and positive and you're living in this kind of like higher vibrational biofield space versus you did it and then now you're sitting there and you're kind of like every bite you take, you're like, I bet there's microplastics in this and there's sea boils and there's like whatever. And you're in this like negative little bubble swirling all around you, bringing your vibe down, bringing your literally though, your vibration level down.
Literally.
That probably really affects things and is received completely differently. And I think we all just need to relax about it. Like the other day I wanted a second coffee because we've not been sleeping very well. And my French press was out. You know how it is to make another French press of coffee. It's like, I literally wanted like 2 inches of coffee. And my mother-in-law has a Keurig at her house, this in my back house. And I was like, oh, I'll just go do that. And then as I was making it, I was watching I was really proud of myself because I think a couple of years ago, I would have made a much bigger deal out of it. Or I would have denied myself the second coffee because I'd be like, blasphemous that I would choose something from a Keurig. And then I was just having this kind of metacognitive moment being like, wow, look at me not giving an absolute shit about the plastic that this hot water is going through because who cares? I'm going to enjoy this coffee and it's going to be so good. And I just literally don't care. Like pick your battles, you know, there's going to be things that are outside of our control. And like, you know, if you can kind of 80%, 20% situation, whatever it is. But I really just want to tell people, especially with early pregnancy, this is not a time to be all wigged out about every single little decision. So, okay, I'm glad we talked about all of that. The last thing that I want to say that's a good thing to start talking about or thinking about in case you don't already know is birth provider research. So if you have it in your mind, you're like, I know what I'm doing. I'm having a home birth, a hospital birth, a birth center birth, whatever. Cool, great. Then you still should begin to reach out to the types of the people who do those. So if it's a midwife, especially if it's a home birth midwife, a lot more people are having home births now than most cities have home birth midwives. So they are usually getting booked up very, very early. So people are calling them even just from repeat clients. They get a positive pregnancy test and they are like immediately on the phone with their midwife going, book me a spot in August or something, you know, or whatever their due date is because they know that they're getting booked up. So you do not want to wait. You don't want to be like, oh, I'll call them when I'm 12 weeks pregnant. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. If you know that that's what you want to do, you get on their radar and even if you're going to change your mind later, okay, whatever. But you have to kind of reserve your spot. And even if you have a miscarriage, like you don't wait until these things are, no, do not wait. Okay. So now if you don't know what you want or you're going to be interviewing people, again, ideally you're starting this kind of like at some point in your first trimester because it can take a long time. So there's basically four ways that you can go about birth. You can, and I'll start from the lowest to the highest here. You can give birth by yourself at your house. It's called an unassisted or a free birth. So that means that there's no medical provider. Obviously, you don't need to contact anyone then if that's your plan. Just you and your partner or you alone or whoever. And you call your friends and whatever. You prep for that and that's an option. Second option is a home birth with a home birth midwife. So these are kind of highly coveted. That's what I'm saying. You should really get on the radar quickly. Third option would be at a birth center. So birth centers are independent, usually like freestanding buildings or sometimes an old house that's been converted. Sometimes also birth centers are inside of hospitals. Mm-hmm. Usually though, they are always manned by midwives. Birth centers usually take a lot more births than one individual midwife does at a home birth setting because there's a rotation of midwives. So usually you might like one that works at a particular birth center, but you're going to have to kind of know and get to know all of them because you don't know who's going to be there working the time of your actual birth. So ideally you enjoy and get along with the whole group of the midwives. Mm-hmm. Or you have a hospital birth. And now within a hospital, you could have a midwife or you could have an OBGYN. Though hospital settings are way more like free and open in terms of them like accepting patients and things, but still some providers book up and you don't want to wait too long. So if you know, you're just in the beginning stages of this and you're like, you know, the pregnancy wasn't necessarily planned, you have no idea what I'm talking about. You're like, holy shit, it's okay. Take a deep breath and begin to just kind of look into these different options so that you can ask around, like, who are the good providers? Who are the good OBGYNs in town that people really, really love? My tip here for choosing an OBGYN is, say you've been going to somebody for your gynecological appointments and they happen to deliver babies too. Unless you maybe like love them and then you also know that their birth philosophy aligns with yours, you don't have to pick that person. That person can just remain your gyn for later, but you can pick somebody different to be doing your OBGYN care, who's going to, you know, be there at the time of your baby's birth, because the person you want there during the time of your baby's birth ideally aligns very, very closely with the way that you want to be treated, the way that you want to be supported, and the way that you believe birth to be. Is it a medical event that needs a lot of intervention, or is it a natural physiological event that needs everybody to get out of the way and just witness you, and then with their expert eye, make sure that everything is okay, but not meddling with it? Because when we meddle, we know that there's more issues. So even if your plan is 100% to get the epidural, you're like, there's no way, Jose, I want to even try to do it any other way. I totally understand that. And I still think it's in your best interest to choose somebody who is pro physiological birth and who has a really good stat for low C-section rates and low induction rates and all of these different things where like they understand that birth, you know, they have reverence for birth. They respect it. Their clients are happy. You hear good things about this person. You know, don't be the person who's like going to be the rebel and go against the grain and like pick the doctor that everybody hates. And you're going to just have like this different experience and be like the exception. Don't do that. There's probably a reason. And you should listen to those reasons. You want to pick somebody that everybody really likes. And also if you go, let's say it's a midwife, say you're going to have a home birth midwife. Say a lot of people love this one particular home birth midwife, but you go and ask her to have coffee with you so you can interview her, which is a totally normal thing, by the way. And you should be doing it. You should be interviewing your people before you meet them. It's harder to interview OBGYNs, but you still can do it. It might be on the phone. That's okay. But say you go and you meet somebody and you are like, something about them just does, you do not vibe. That happened to me one time in San Diego. I really thought that I was going to love this midwife that my friend had birthed with. And she, I don't know. Everybody just has a different perspective, you know? And she was just like rough around the edges and really kind of like harsh and aggressive. And I was like so weepy and sweet and newly pregnant and like, whoa, you know, like about to get my period type feels. And she made me cry in the interview. Not made me, she didn't make me cry, but she like touched a soft spot. Something about her like rubbed me the wrong way. It was about my due date. She was grilling me about my due date. And it may have been for this whole reason of this entire episode of this podcast, she might have wanted to really understand my exact due date. And I get that. But the way she went about it was like as if I was stupid. And it triggered something. And I was like, oh my God, no. And my friend really couldn't believe that I didn't vibe with her because she thought we were going to. But when you are pregnant, you are different. You are a different person now. And you just, your energy is different. And you may want like someone who's grandma earth and really, really calm and grounded. You may want somebody who's going to be a little bit more managerial because you feel safe in their sort of authoritative attitude. You may want somebody who's going to like give it to you straight because you're done with the bullshit. Like, you know what I mean? There's lots of different ways that it can go about. It's going to be really different. So don't pin yourself into what you think like old you would have wanted or needed, because you could just be shocked at what you actually are feeling most supported by. And that's the best thing, is that you feel the most supported by this person.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to say, because I tell this to my patients, because they often ask, you know, what kind of birth should I have? And it's such a personal thing. And what I always say is wherever you feel that you can be the calmest, because just because somebody like you might feel the most at peace and at calm having a home birth and you want to be trendy or you want to be in like the crunchy community and it's like, well, everyone has home births because that's what healthy people do or whatever. but there's something in you, like either innate or maybe even in your partner or something, where that actually feels really scary. And you think, you know, for me, I would tell my patients to meditate, pray, whatever you need to do to get like really clear with your higher knowing, your like inner true self, and really think like, where would you feel the safest? Some people feel really safe in a hospital setting.
Yep.
Some people feel really safe knowing that there's, you know, emergency, you know, C-section opportunities, like right down the hall, like whatever it is. And some people feel very unsafe, you know, in that maybe authoritative kind of sterile environment or whatever. And so there's no right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, there's different outcomes that can happen in two different situations, but do your research, because you might have a preconceived notion of maybe what home birth is. If you, let's say your partner is very fearful of it, but you actually look into the research and see how safe it is. Or you might be a crunchy mama and think that hospitals are terrible, but then like you actually learn that there's a lot of empowered births that can happen in a hospital setting or whatever. Like do your research, but then really tune in on where are you going to feel the safest? Because at the end of the day, the best outcome of birth is going to be where you feel the safest.
And with your intuition. Like yeah. I have known people who planned on home birth and then got pregnant and they were like, you know what? I want to be in the hospital. And then, you know, who knows, you know, chicken or the egg, but it was like a really damn good thing that they were in the hospital for that, for the outcome that happened, or mm-hmm. vice versa. I know this one friend who was super, super medical, was just like, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go and immediately get the epidural and stuff like that. And then like towards the end of her second trimester, first off, was like an entire recluse, did not talk to anybody her first trimester, was just so internal, which is something that can happen where you just like feel like mm-hmm. you're involuting in on yourself. And then came out of it and was like, no, I'm having a home birth, and was almost going to have a free birth. She didn't want a single person around her. She was just like totally had this 180 flip, like for no reason other than just her energy plus intuition and whatever, whatever. And it's just so fascinating the way that that can be.
Yeah.
I'm so happy though that you said that, like where you feel the calmest and the safest, because that is the biggest factor.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I am obviously, and you, we're big home birth advocates. And I think it's because we want to, there's such a stigma that it's like dangerous or it's ignorant mm-hmm. or that it, you're like crazy for not wanting drugs or whatever. It's like, there's so many reasons why people have home birth. And one of them, yeah, is because they're actually very afraid of hospitals and mm-hmm. they have had very, very bad experiences there, or they have bad memories, or they're triggered or whatever. You don't know. You don't know the situations that have led up to the situation where somebody is choosing to do it in a different spot. Because if whatever is going to make you feel the deeply or the deepest sense of calm, support, fully being able to surrender and relax in this extremely vulnerable and intense situation, mm-hmm. that's where you need to be. It's the exact same, you know, you can think about it. Well, where would you want to be witnessed having sex
yeah.
or taking a poop or something like that? And if you can imagine yourself doing that in the setting, because you're like, well, I want these other people around, or I want to be in this situation where there's this other technology, then do it there, because you will end up being safer there. Because yeah. you're actually calmer, and that matters yeah. so much.
Yeah, it's wherever you feel the safest. So, and there's no judgment, you know, on yes. on that. So, yeah, and there's like so many things we could talk about on getting your partner on board. I think we even have. I feel like we've said everything that has ever needed to be said.
Okay, well, let me say one last thing, which is that if you, so I have a whole course now, which you've probably heard me talk about before. It's called the 6-week pregnancy call, but now I have it available where it is not a live class. Well, I have the option that's the live class, but if you just only want the lessons that I teach mm-hmm. and there's no Q&As, there's no group chat support, mm-hmm. there's none of the like camaraderie community aspect to it, which I love. And that's why I maintain that portion of the way that the class runs. If you just want it stripped down to the lessons only, that is an option now. And I know it has been highly requested. Yeah, finally I figured it out how to do that. golly, I did not set out to be a coder. I'm annoyed.
Oh, but this because you have a WordPress now.
I know. The amount of website stuff with these courses.
I know. We had this conversation. It's okay. You're going to figure it out.
This is like, you know, women just, when you are working from home, especially if it's your own business and you have kids and stuff, and you're like, yeah, just the amount of hats I did not expect to wear. But either way, so sorry that it's taken a long time. Now it's available. You can buy the course, just the lessons if you want that. And I talk about all of this at length, plus a million more things. It's like 11 plus hours long, and it covers pregnancy, birth, breastfeeding, and postpartum, all of the things that I wish everybody knew. So it's kind of like you're just cheat sheet handed over to you. Everything's through a natural and integrative medicine perspective, plus all of the experience that I have as a mom of four and, you know, a reproductive health specialist in the naturopathic medical world. So I think that it's pretty awesome. It's really fun. And I will link that in the show notes too. I just wanted to obviously plug that because somebody who's listening to this podcast looking for more information like that, yes, you can absolutely piece it all together. You can listen to podcasts, you can read blogs, you can find accounts on Instagram, you can do whatever, whatever. But there is also a lot of misinformation. And I understand that that is really overwhelming and it's really difficult. It's even difficult for us sometimes to understand the misinformation that's out there about, like, you know, new health stuff that's coming out. It's like, oh my God, I feel bad for people who have, like, you know, maybe they didn't have a barometer of like what direction when they're trying to read some of this stuff, because it's really kind of wild out there. So I try to make, you know, clear out all of the noise and just give you this one good hefty research based resource where you can, you know, have this be your guiding light for going forward into your new motherhood journey. And I really hope that it helps. So thank you for being on this episode with me today while we break this down, because I think that it's important to talk about all of this stuff. And oftentimes people are not even telling people they're pregnant for, you know, 3 months. So how are you going to, you know, crowdsource and stuff? So anyway, I really hope that this helps.
No, I think it's so important. And I didn't say earlier that we've talked about everything on this episode. I mean, like in the podcast, I feel like
there's
a link, like a seed that I can imagine in my brain that we've said this at some point in some episode, but I don't remember when or how, because this is 100th, right? This is our 100th episode.
Episode. Oh my God,
that's amazing. So cool. And I just want to tell everybody your program's amazing. This is the stuff you're not going to get this, you guys. If you go to your OB-GYN, even a midwife, even like the best midwives who have information, is not going to be like this course. There is nowhere else to get this. I mean, where do you get it? You're not going to get it unless you read. You and then some of the books, you know, some of the books that you get about pregnancy are like, why are you saying that?
I know. You're
written by like an old man in like 1950 and you're like, no, life is different now. So I think your course is amazing and everybody should have it. And it's awesome because it goes through the whole thing. I mean, you're going to be going through it all. You're going to have birth and you're going to be postpartum and you're going to need to know it. And the best time is the sooner you know this information, the better. So even if you're not pregnant yet, but you're trying, you know, getting a program like this just to have in your back pocket, because as soon as you become pregnant, it's just takes off from there.
Yeah, it takes off from there. No, it's so true. It's like, yeah, these next steps are coming for you. And I'm glad that you mentioned too about the providers, midwives included, not giving you this information. And I think I kind of was like meditating on this the other day, thinking about it. And I'm like, oh, actually, nobody ever said that they were going to be the ones that gave it to us. We, I think, just assumed that they would be the ones, but that isn't actually their job. Their job is to monitor you and the baby and make sure that everything's growing healthfully, but they are not also all-in-one motherhood educators. I think we kind of expect them to be, and it's sort of like unfair.
Because we need it. Because back in the day, it was your community. It was all the other women who'd come before you and all of the like wise elders of the tribes and all the things, but there is no person in that world. Even doulas, who are amazing, they're the ones that know about birth. They aren't necessarily, I mean, some of them are, you know, all throughout your pregnancy and postpartum, which is cool, but not many of them. I mean, where do you get this information?
Yeah, you would literally have to just piece it together yourself. Yeah. And it takes a long time. So hence why I made the course. It is kind of like there's a huge gap.
I mean, we both work in the gaps, right? We both work in the gaps, not only because we know them as doctors and we've seen that with our patients, but we've experienced them ourselves.
Yes.
And I just feel like there's wisdom that comes from that you just can't even get anywhere else. I don't know.
Unless you experience it. Yeah. Because like you with your fertility stuff, me with my just being smacked in the face by postpartum motherhood, like, yeah, because we just didn't know. Yeah. And we didn't know until we had to figure it out ourselves. And then we were like, holy crap, this is so stupid. Like, why did nobody tell us? Oh, because there is nobody there to tell.
Yeah,
oh,
because nobody actually knows. We were doctors. I mean, I went through all of school, medical school. You too.
Yeah.
I know. We know a lot of things. We still don't know any of that. You know, from the fertility perspective, for me, you know, for you and all of the stuff, it's like, where in the world, if it's not in medical school, where is it? Like, we've been to the depths of the education of all, you know, every book that's been written, all the podcasts, you know, not to say that we've had all the education, but it's like, I just don't even know. I mean, what about, you know, my friend who's an investment banker who doesn't even know when she ovulates?
Yeah, well, how are these people supposed to, it would be like a whole full-time job. Actually, yeah. Somebody in my six-week pregnancy call that's running right now is, she's not trying to conceive yet. She's like getting ready and just tracking her cycle, because she'd never tracked her cycle before. Mm-hmm. She's like, this feels like a full-time job, because mm-hmm. she's like, I have to do the strips and like these days and then like this on this mm-hmm. day. So, and the way she's so funny and cute, and the way that she like was explaining it, I was just like, you're so right. When it's the learning curves are vertical, like mm-hmm. it's just all so new all at once, and there's no support and like people to ask and what's going on and what does this mean and why does it look like this and rah rah da ba da ba da ba da about any of this stuff. Like,
you know,
we all would have had that in our community when we were sitting there, like, I mean, not to be so stereotypical, but literally this is the way that it was when we were in villages and tribes, like weaving the baskets and talking all day long. Women were talking. It's our favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
Talk and be social. And there's a reason for that. And mm-hmm. we were learning all of this information. We were watching our people, our friends, nurse and understand how to take care of a baby and all this different stuff. So that by the time we were doing it ourselves, it wasn't the first time we'd ever seen a baby's mouth on a breast before. I think yeah. that's insane. I had never seen a baby's mouth on a breast before up close.
Yeah.
Before it was my own baby.
I know.
Well, so stupid.
But to even highlight that, you know, that is all true. And that for the most part, you know, back if you look at people who are studying the more traditional cultures, even now in the world, which aren't many, but there are still some, a lot of their births and everything, they get pregnant easily. They have easier pregnancies and easier births for various reasons we could dive into. But not only do we need to know that, we live in a really crazy world where we also need to navigate all the other stuff. Like in my world with fertility, you know, knowing all of the things to navigate and like you said, tracking your cycle. I mean, that's not even something traditional peoples had to do because they didn't have a hard time getting pregnant like we do now. And they didn't have toxins and all of these things. And for us, we didn't have to navigate the hospital and the C-section and the midwife and the this and the like, there's so much even more that we have now than any traditional cultures even had to navigate anyways. So even if it was just normal physiological getting pregnant, being pregnant, giving birth, breastfeeding, that would be hard enough doing without any experience, knowledge, or exposure. But we have that plus all of the dysfunction that our culture and society yes. in the world has put on top of it. So it's like, whoa.
It's like, whoa. Yeah. And then we're working and
it's
just, yeah, it is banana pants. I mean, I'm, you know, we're grateful for it. I'm not trying to complain about it, but we just are trying to acknowledge how much is on everybody's plate and that it, unfortunately, just the way that it is, we do have to try harder because of the mm-hmm. way that our modern world has made in some ways things easier and in some ways things harder. And in the reproductive mm-hmm. space, it's really, really failing us. And so we have to make a lot more of an effort because our hormones are so affected by things. And it's just, unfortunately, it's not going away anytime soon. So we just have to be aware of it. And hopefully this isn't like stressful to hear. It's kind of empowering so that you can take it in. But yeah, we get it though. It's like, okay, you got to find your people and your support systems and really place high prioritized value on that. Mm-hmm. Because it otherwise it could just be a many more years and a much more expensive process in so many different ways. So mm-hmm. anyways, okay. I know we really thought this was going to be a short episode.
I know. It never does. Never ends that way. Okay. Well, thank you so much for all of your knowledge and wisdom. As always, you're the best.
Are you pregnant or trying to conceive and looking for reliable, engaging education around how to have a healthy pregnancy and prepare for the future aspects of motherhood to come, like birth, breastfeeding, and postpartum? Well, then look, I've got you. This is exactly the education that you'll receive with my 6-week pregnancy call. You get access to my most comprehensive resource of everything I wish women knew before heading into motherhood. It's simultaneously a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 course, and postpartum planning class all in one. And now it's available not only during our live rounds, where you get tons of one-on-one support from me and a small group of like-minded women, but also in a lessons-only format. The lessons-only version of this course is just that. It's all of the content, but it's without the Q&A calls and without the group chat. This version is available on my website at all times, too. So log on to www.milkmedicine.com/lessons-only to check it out, or you can go to the show notes for the link. I hope that you'll enjoy it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.